Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post his alt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at DungeonsMaster.com. And welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Hey everybody, welcome to D&D Encounters, Season 13, Storm Over Neverwinter. Tonight we talk about Session 4, The Ashmada Strike Back. So I guess the long and short we could talk about is the characters. People are going mad all over town. Some of the people that are branded with the Ashmadai symbol are just randomly attacking people. Your characters go around, they solve a few things, they help a few people, and then all of a sudden they end up at Eldon Vargas's home, one of the merchants, right?
Yep.
And
private residence,
and he's being attacked by a devil, a couple of thugs, and some branded people. And from there, the characters help him, and at the end, he disappears, and you get rewarded. But we'll talk about the reward later on. Tonight's going to be an interesting evening due to quite a few schedule mix-ups and myself being out of town, and my other guy couldn't play this week either. We have one session to talk about, but we're going to talk about some good, bad, some of the ugly of what we basically read before going to the encounter. We're going to do two the next time we get together. So, Derek, without any further ado, please be our guest this evening.
Indeed. Okay. Well, thanks again for having me, and Craig, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
I'm glad you're feeling better. Craig was under the weather, Indeed. So he missed our sessions for both stores this week, which was unfortunate.
Oh, that's kind of funny. He's been under the weather. Storm Over Neverwinter.
Yeah, the storms have been getting to me.
I totally intended for that pun. That wasn't an accident at all.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay, unfortunately, so. I was out for the count on Monday. Wednesday. I was really just completely out of it. I couldn't do it. And then the second game, we just had so many people, and I'm still not 100%. So I was like, yeah, you know what, that's fine. I'll just take a back seat this week.
And I missed a game. I missed the game at the first store because I had tickets to the NHL playoffs. And then tonight I was there for sure. And yeah, like Craig said, we have been having great attendance. We have been running three tables of six all season. We've had some new people show up. And tonight we had a few regulars were absent. We still had three tables of six, and then we actually had a couple other people come a little bit later. Craig was one of the extra people, although he was on time, and a couple other people came in. So we actually had to turn a couple of people away. It's unfortunate that our store doesn't have a larger gaming space because we easily could have run a fourth table tonight had we had the room. But, you know, again, we're grateful that they offer us the room for three tables, which we've got now. They keep alluding to a gaming space that will be coming sooner, but until it does, we make do with what we've got. So anyway, I was the only one out of the three of us that ran or played. In this case, I ran the session. I had a table of six. It was, I believe, the exact same six, no, five of the six that I've had over the last couple of weeks. So there was that consistency. And I actually had my sixth guy was one of the regulars from our other store who was also absent on Monday. So I knew him and he knew me, but he didn't know any of the other players. So our group has an interesting makeup. We have not had a defender at all. We've had two controllers, and tonight we actually had three controllers. And one of our strikers, who's playing a rogue, unfortunately, just never seems to be able to get a combat advantage. So he is a very lackluster striker for most rounds. You know, as the rogue, he either uses his crossbow or a dagger, and he's only doing like 7 to 10 damage at best. Which, if you're the only striker in the party, it's really making the combats just drag out forever. And tonight was no exception. It was running so long. I actually had to call the fight because it got 2 hours in, and I'm just like, okay, we're done. But yeah. Anyway, I get ahead of myself. So as Mark had said, the encounter picked up right where last week's left off. So we have a couple of our characters have taken some significant damage and have only like one or even zero surges left. So one of the wizards wanted to use the ritual, the Comrade Succor. They say that? Succor?
Sucker.
We always say the Comrade Sucker, but I don't know if that's correct. Anyway, that's the one where you get to shift the surges around. But I haven't played a wizard in forever, but I'm pretty sure the ritual says it takes like a half an hour. So
yeah.
like more than it takes more than 5 minutes, I'm fairly certain. So, you know, my guys have been asking me, oh, can we cast this ritual? Based on the way the events are set up between weeks 3 and weeks 4, it doesn't sound like the party really has more than the 5 minutes to take a short rest. So I told them no, they got to live with what they've got. Now, it didn't come into play at all. The guys with no surges didn't drop because they had no surges left. But, I mean, on the one hand, I like when the adventure pushes the party to sort of act immediately. But on the other hand, it's like, you know what? If this was a group of brand new players who just didn't know any better and were out of surges, I might have made the exception. I don't know. What do you guys think? Like, if you had been running a table with that, what would you have done?
Well, I think it's personally, I think it would be situational, depending. Like you said, they're brand new players, and if it was something where it's just like it's really crappy that you're in the situation, then yeah, I would have probably given them the benefit of the doubt. But
I would have.
How would that have worked at your table? Is that even an issue?
No, it's not an issue at all. But in your case, I would have been more than accommodating to them. I would have said that they would, you know, they don't get an extended rest or anything like that. They just kind of hidey-hole a bit. In the meantime, you can kind of give the story of, well, you hear some people being slain outside, or there's some ruckus, or all kinds of stuff like that, and people might get antsy. But just to answer your question, Comrade Sucker is actually a five-minute ritual.
Oh, it is 5 minutes. Okay. Yeah, so now, again, I've always assumed that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that during a short rest, you can't do anything. Like, if you do anything at all, even casting a ritual, you're not resting.
That's my understanding of it, too.
I mean, in my home game, I've made a few exceptions. We had one amazing, amazing adventure where I actually turned the 5 minute rest into a skill challenge, and I wrote a blog post about it. And my group still talks about how awesome that was. It's definitely one of the high points of my DMing career. I just had this idea, and it worked amazing. But yeah, in my opinion, that is totally the exception rather than the norm. But I don't know. I think just the way it was set up between weeks 3 and 4, it's like week 3 ends with the characters come out of the thing after the fight, out of the bar after the fight. They hear the horns going off. Clearly, the whole town is under attack. Something's going on. The messenger guy comes running over to deliver this message that, hey, the soldiers are needed to help maintain order. And when we pick up this week, the PCs are approached by this young girl who is a member of the Dead Rats gang. Now, we actually had a guy in our party who's a Dead Rats deserter, so that was perfect.
Yeah.
You know, we were able to do a little role play. The characters tried to now, it says in the adventure that the little girl will provide the information for 25 GP. So I'd like, she comes up, she wants 50 GP. And I'm thinking they're going to want to roll to bring the price down, which they do. And the one guy's like, I offer her 2 gold pieces. I'm like, okay, dude, like, I go, even she knows, like, you don't go from 50 to 2. I'm like,
was this guy a real estate agent or what?
Yeah, like, give me a number that's some. And I'm like, she starts haggling with you. And then the guy who's a Dead Rest deserter, I give him an insight check. And just the way I'm having her react to that one character, he sort of picks up on it. And so I tell him, I'm like, you get the impression. You see some more kids off in the dark. And I'm like, you can tell. Like, they're definitely part of a street gang. You figure, you know, you put 2 and 2 together. And you figure that these kids are part of the Dead Rats. And they're trying to get into the main gang. And I go, they may not know that you're a deserter, but they've heard of you and you have a reputation with them. So you think they'll listen to you. So he managed to finagle the price down to, I think, 25 or 30. Like, so I was like, okay. So she gave them the information. And basically how I set it up was, she's like, we've been watching you guys. We've been watching these locations. We saw these other group. And they actually didn't leave. You know, they left the bar just before you did. So they're not far away from here. They're on their way. Like, what does it say in the adventure? It says, they're gonna take out the merchant at his house, and that's the exact quote. So, you know, they're like, she's like, they're clearly going somewhere. I've had a few of my gang follow them. I'm like, if we hurry, we can catch them. So again, it's that sort of, you know, you need to act quickly. And I said to the characters, I'm like, the, you know, time is of the essence. Now I'm gonna throw some things at you that are going on around you. You can decide based on your character, are you going to help the people along the way, or are you just going to go for the main quest? And so again, some of the characters were very much, this is the bigger problem, we gotta, you know, just avoid any other delays. Whereas some of the other characters were like, no, like, hey, there's guys robbing a store, we're going to do the right thing, we're going to stop and make sure that they put the goods down, and away we go. So there's 4 little encounters you can run. I didn't actually run them in the order they're presented. I just switched them up a little bit. But I made them very sort of loosey-goosey. I described the scene. And then I put it to the characters. I said, this is the scene. How do you interact with it? What do you do? And I made it clear that you don't have to do anything. You can ignore it and keep going. And a couple of the characters did, and a couple of the characters chose to interact. I let them use whatever skill they felt was appropriate. It says as a guideline, the DC should be between 14 and 21. Again, anyone who rolled double digits on a check, for the most part, I gave it to them. I think we only had one guy roll really poorly. It was the little encounter where the runaway horse is coming at you. And I said, everybody's got to jump out of the way or do some other action to avoid damage. You know, I'm thinking some guy might say, look, I'm wearing heavy armor and a shield. I'm going to make an endurance check to just sustain the blow, you know, whatever. But everyone opted to do athletics or endurance or athletics or acrobatics. One guy rolled a one. So I'm like, you take a healing surge as the cart tramples over you. But no, it was good. The group really got into it. I mean, we've got a couple of players that are really alpha, so they wanted to be the star of every scene. And we've got a few newer players, so I had to really, as the DM, sort of, you know, act like the traffic cop and sort of say, okay, hold on, you've had your chance. Let's these other guys decide what they want to do first. And, you know, I think that took probably about 20 minutes and to do the four little scenes. And they seemed to enjoy that. Nobody really took any damage. The one guy lost one healing surge, but he had missed 2 weeks, so his character had lots of surges left. And and then we picked it up, you know, with the encounter where they arrive. Basically, they catch up to the villains, and they see them going around a corner. And then, of course, they sent a couple of stealthy guys up to follow them. They see the bad guys breaking into the house. Which, of course, the stealthy guys immediately follow right up to listen and look and see what's going on. And they hear the read aloud text where it's like, you know, the Ashmada are here because you're a jerk and we're going to kill you and all that stuff. And so then, initiative, boom, it's on. And so the guys who were sneaky, I'm like, do you guys want to do anything? And they're like, no, we're going to wait for the rest of the party. And then we jump right into the combat. Now, one of the things that I had been reading on the forums, and this was similar to the advice we had from last week, was the maps are great. As always with D&D Encounters, they provide great maps.
They do.
However, this house had no windows. It had, I think, one window in the front. And it didn't have a back door. And basically, because it was going to be so crammed, the suggestion that was posted on the forums was add a whole bunch of windows, add a back door. If the players ask for stuff like that, say yes and throw it on the map as you deem appropriate. So I told the guys that were sneaking up in the first at the beginning, I said, you guys have a quick chance to look around. You see, and so I said, I go, although then on the map, there's windows here, and on the second floor, here. And I said, around the back, assume there's probably a door here, although you can't see it. But I'm like, out of game, yes, there's a door there if your characters want to go around to the back. And it gave them a few more options. But with three controllers in the group, the fight took forever. Our striker wasn't doing anywhere near the damage he could because he didn't have combat advantage.
Yeah.
The three controllers, zones. We had four simultaneous different zones happening at the same time, overlapping some of the same squares, which, I mean, was a great idea because all the monsters were all clumped together at the beginning.
Yeah, but it's a DM nightmare.
Oh, my God. Seriously. It's so hard to adjudicate. I have different colored markers, and so I'm like, I said to the guy, okay, what did you do? I'm like, okay, your zone is the light blue. What did you do? Okay, your zone is the pink zone. What did you do? Okay, your zone is the purple zone. Okay, how long is yours last? End of encounter. How long is yours last? End of your next turn. How long is yours last? Sustain minor. Like, okay, I go, you guys, when my monsters go, you have to be on the ball. Because if you don't tell me on their turn what the zones do, I'm ignoring them. And they're like, okay. So when the monster's turn came around, I'm like, hey, this guy's in the pink zone, the blue zone. What happens to him? And they were very, very – at least they were very good about saying, that guy's got a -2 to attack as long as he's in the zone. That guy's slowed. That guy will fall prone if he attacks. You know, it's like, okay. Oh, my God, though. It took forever.
Yeah. Movement must have been a real bitch, too. Excuse the expression, but
– just as you're explaining it, I was feeling a little bit stress.
I was feeling claustrophobic.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Well, and then what happened was some of the zones attacked all creatures.
Yeah.
So we had the three controllers standing at the front door doing all the zones. Then we had – I'm trying to think of what else we had in our party. We had a cleric who went around to the back door. We had the rogue striker who stayed at the window at the front. And honest to God, I can't think of what the last guy was. A warlock. He – again, same thing. He goes – he's a really experienced player. He's like, I'm not going anywhere near the inside until the zones go away. And they're like, we're just going to keep doing them. And so – you know, they sort of reluctantly stopped the zones for a couple of rounds so the other heroes could get inside. But the fact that the guys who actually had the capability of doing big damage refused to go inside because the zones were active just made it, it just dragged it on and on and on and on. And then, unfortunately, the cleric was the only guy who opted to use the back door that I invented. And he went in, and he had an amazing couple of rounds. He had a counter power that was a blast three. He got three guy, hit them all. He rolled the maximum dice damage, so they all took – it was like rolling three crits. He rolled the maximum damage, did all sorts of great stuff to them. Unfortunately, nobody in the party came to his aid, even though he's like, hey, guys, I'm the only guy back here. Somebody get in here to help me.
Man.
Yeah. I had the guys with the these are the zealots. They're the ones with the chains and the branding irons. There were two of them standing right there. So I'm like, hey, the first guy grabs you with the chain, pulls you close, stabs you with the branding iron. I'm like, how you doing? Oh, I'm really hurt. I'm like, okay, the other guy's a couple squares away. He wraps you with the chain, pulls you closer. What happens? He's like, oh, I'm down. I'm like, he stabs you with the branding iron. Oh, I'm at minus. I think he was at like minus 10. I was like, okay. And I already killed this guy's character once earlier this season. So I'm like, I'm sorry, but I'm like, it's a combination of him putting himself in these situations and the party not helping him. So I'm like, and he said, he goes, you know what? He goes, it's unfortunate, but he goes, I don't regret what I did. He goes, I think that was the right move for my guy to go in by himself in the back. And he goes, I had a great round. I did all this damage. And I was like, no, as a leader, you had an awesome turn, but it was unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But in order to help make the map less claustrophobic, first round when was it Vargas? Is that the guy's name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eldon Vargas.
Turn came around. The very first thing I did, I had him run up the stairs. Because I thought, he's a level 7 guy, and although he's supposed to help the party, if they ask for help and if they don't seem like jerks, he's just so powerful. I thought, nobody's coming to encounters to watch me play the hero fight the bad guys that are running.
Yeah.
I thought, you know what? I'm not even going to run him. I'm just going to say that he flees. He goes upstairs.
It's like reverse lair assault.
Yeah. I'm like, he takes off. And they're like, oh, okay, good. And then over the next two rounds, I had the monsters chase them because, you know, the guys with the zones, this guy's slowed, this guy's immobilized, this guy falls prone. So I had like one of the guys crawl out of the zone and then stand up. And then the next round he did a move action, like double move to get. So I think I removed three or four of the monsters off the big bad guy off the board and go to the second level, like by the end of the second or maybe the third round. And so by the top of the fourth round, I'm like, you guys can hear screaming coming from upstairs. Like, clearly, they've got him outnumbered, and they're laying the boots to him. Like, he is in pain. You guys got to get up there and help him. Yeah, we will. We will. It was like five or six more rounds. They spent all their time clearing the bottom level, which I don't necessarily fault them for that, but it just took so long to do. And then I'm like, okay, what are you guys doing? And they're like, well, we're not really sure who we should send up first. And, you know, it was kind of crazy, but... a couple of interesting things that did happen. Once they had killed all the monsters, actually before they killed the last guy, there was the one thug was left, and he was in a square adjacent to the rogue, and on his other side, diagonally away from him, was adjacent to the unconscious cleric. And so I had to turn to the rogue, and he says, "Look, the thug was bloodied at this point. He had like probably less than 10 hit points." He turns to the rogue and he goes, "Look, I'm leaving. I'm gonna head for that back door, and I'm running. If you attack me on my way out, basically, if you take an opportunity to attack against me, I'm gonna stop running, and I'm gonna take this branding iron, and I'm gonna put it through the unconscious guy's skull." And so basically, I said, "I'm like, look, if he hits him, he'll do a coup de grace. He will kill him outright." I'm like, "What do you do?" And the rogue's like, "Maybe I could do this." I'm like, "Look, you have literally." Provoke an opportunity attack as he goes from square one to square two and square three. And after that, he's gone. What do you... And I go, in both squares, he's adjacent to the unconscious character. He hums and haws for a second. I'm like, okay, I'm moving from square one to two. What do you do? I'm moving from square two. Okay, attack him. Okay. I know if he attacks him and does nearly the maximum damage, kill him. But he has to roll good. He has to hit and he has to roll good on the damage. He rolled the natural one. I had the thug go, "How dare you attack me? I gave you a chance to save your friend. His death is on your conscience." He took the branding iron, he stabbed him. I rolled a 19. Oh, the branding iron killed him. I killed that character.
Wow.
Like, I'm sorry, but I go, that wasn't on me. I go, that was on the guy playing the rogue. And he's like, no, I don't fault him. I would have done the same thing. So, and then of course the next round, the wizard comes in, magic missile, pew, kills him. So, I'm like, he was dead anyway. So anyway, once they get cleared out the bottom level, the wizard, one of the guys playing the wizards, he's like, can I use my arcana sense to try and like detect for magic? And I go, well, what are you trying to detect for? He goes, there's been a lot of demons. Maybe there's like some sort of summoning thing or some sort of residual effect that I can, he goes, maybe there's an invisible monster here or something. I'm like, okay, give me a check. I normally detect magic. It's like a, I'm like, okay, go for it. And he rolled amazing. His check was almost like a 30. So I thought, I'm going to have some fun with this. On the map, there's like a little bathroom.
Right.
So I, this guy's a wizard. Nobody wants to have smelly poop in their house. So he's got magic enchantment on his crapper. He keeps, this guy's like, I quickly do a detect magic. What do I detect? I go, oh yeah, there's definitely magic coming from this square. He's like, hey guys, there's something over there. Because again, it'll take a minute. I let him do it in 6 seconds. So I'm like, you just get a flash. It's something in that square. So one of the guys has an item that lets him detect any enemies, invisible or otherwise, within a 5 foot, 5 squares. So the guy's like, okay, I'm going to use the encounter power on my, or I think it's even daily power on my item. And I use it. I'm in the center of the house. Everyone on the basement level, I detect. Is there anyone? I'm like, nope, you detect no creatures. He's like, okay, guys, despite what the wizard's telling you, there are no creatures on this level. Let's go upstairs. The wizard's like, no, no, no. He wouldn't have, the DM wouldn't have told us there was something there if there was nothing there. Something's wrong with your magic item.
Oh, so, man.
You didn't detect Mr. Hankey?
So, they're all, like, avoiding the square. One guy's here, and I, like, I shoot a magic missile in the square. Is there anything there? I'm like, no, it's hitting the wall, harmless. Nothing happens. And they're like, what the hell? So after a couple rounds, they're like, I'm like, you can hear the guy upstairs screaming in pain. Like, the monsters are taking him to town. They're like, okay, fine. We're going to go up and help him. Well, except for one of the other wizards who usually just hangs back and shoots magic missile. He's like, can I get into the fight? I'm like, no, they're all like conga-lining it up the stairs. The first guy went to the top of the stairs and stopped, so no one can get past him with a provoking opportunity attack. So he's like, well, if I can't get into the fight, I'm going to go back and examine that square. I'm like, okay, give me an arcana check. So he makes an arcana check, and I'm like, you figure out what it is. It's his magic toilet. And he's like, and they're all like, oh, you're kidding me. One of the guys just is in hysterics. He's like, I can't believe you wasted all that time on a magic crapper.
That's like an auto prestidigitation built in.
You should have pulled out a Golgoth and.
Yeah, that's a much needed levity to the table because by then, like, especially after I like some of the characters, some of the players were all like, oh man. But they, yeah, that brought the table to a good round of laughter. They thought that was a pretty creative use. So he's using the detect magic. He's like, oh my God, I can't believe that's what you did. I'm like, hey, you said detect magic, you detect magic. That's all you got. So, yeah.
He's got an unseen servant wiper or what?
One of the specifics, they can use their magic. So then by the time they got upstairs, I had the main devil bad guy plus three other of the other dudes, who two of whom were already bloodied. We had already been 2 hours in at this point. I was getting tired. The fight was taking forever. I let them do about two more rounds because some of them still had daily powers they wanted to use. So I wanted to let them have a chance to do that because they'd been like, I'm saving my daily for the big bad guy. So I let them all fire off their dailies. The devil guy had 80 hit points to begin with. I think they maybe did 20 points of damage by then. And I was like, you know what, guys? I'm calling it. Like, you've killed all the mooks. The only guy left is the devil. There's five of you. And by this point, Vargas had started to help the party a little bit. I'm like, you guys easily take him. Do you kill him or knock him unconscious? They're like, absolutely not. We kill him. I'm like, okay, well, you're not going to be able to question him then. No problem. And then, you know, Vargas gives them their reward. They get their money and their magic items. And, This is one of the and we talked about this a little bit before the recording. So at the end of the adventure, Vargas basically gives them his sob story. You know, they're like, well, why were the monsters attacking you? And he says, well, you know, I'm from Cormyr. I was a war wizard. I've come to Neverwinter. Unfortunately, my wife, she was cursed and, you know, she's gone insane. So when we got to Neverwinter, I brought him to Helm's Hold, which is like an insane asylum, and they're going to help her out. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to see her. I'm not sure what's going on with that, and since some of the PCs were like from the previous season, they were the heroes of Neverwinter. I'm like, he recognizes you as heroes of Neverwinter, and he says like, look, you guys have some pull. You guys can get an audience with Neverember. Like, pull some strings here. Let me go see my wife. And he's like, you know what? As in return, I will do what I can with my magic to help some of the other people who are under the effect of the Azmati. And they're like, yeah, okay, absolutely, no problem. We're totally cool with helping you out. And then it's like, and then Vargas takes off. It's like, hell, the party just rescued him, and he's like, I need your help. And they're like, yeah, we're totally going to help you. You're a cool guy. And then he's like, okay, see you later.
Well, this is after he gives them 300 gold pieces each and each a magic item.
some swag. You guys are cool. I trust you. Okay, see you later. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Thanks for helping me. I'm gone.
Yeah, so I basically what I said to the party was, I'm like, look, you guys have been fighting all night. You haven't had a chance to take an extended rest, but it's clearly like getting close to morning. So for me personally, I'm like, how am I gonna save this situation? So I just said to them, I'm like, you guys absolutely need a rest. You're dead on your feet. You've used all your powers. Vargas tells you that, you know, he's like, you know what? I gotta meet some people. I gotta run a couple of quick errands. I gotta get healed up because I had said that he got pretty badly hurt during the fight. He's like, he's gonna go and meet with some people, and he'll meet you at the Helm's Hold, you know, in the morning. And I go, that gives you a chance to do an extended rest. They're like, okay, good, good. And then of course, they're like, oh, well, can we just stay in his house and take our extended rest here? And I'm like, well, no, you met the guy 5 minutes ago. Why do you think he would trust you in his house? Plus the front doors were smashed in. Again, it wasn't clear where the party was supposed to be taking this extended rest.
Yeah, well, I think it's like a couple days later for the next encounter.
Next chapter, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was supposed to be like... Right ahead. To do my preview article, and I've deliberately not read the finer points since then because I'm playing it as well as running it, so I'm trying not to spoil it for myself. But I got the impression that it was this whole, you know, the storm is pending, the storm is still here. We've got a sort of a small break in the storm for a few hours, and then the next day the storm starts to pick up again in the morning when their adventure resumes.
Yeah, it says at the start of the session, it says 2 days have passed.
Oh, okay. See, that wasn't clear to me session before. So the party was like, do we go back in where we started? And then I'm like, well, I don't know, it sounds like there's still some craziness going on in the town. And they're like, well, geez, we don't have any resources, you know, we can't fight them, we don't have surges, we don't have powers. I was like, you know what, I don't know, let's just say you get back to the inn safe and sound. And they're like, oh, that's kind of a cheat. And I was like, yeah, I don't know, it doesn't tell me in the adventure what to do. So, and I mean, for a lesser experience, what are they like, they would have no idea. I mean, yeah. I knew what I was doing and I was still confused.
Yeah, you could have done if the guy friggin' enchanted his toilet. Imagine what he did to his bed.
Oh my.
Yeah. Is that a
phantasmal assault?
I've got a cloaker that covers me.
Well, as long as you're not the mimic from the last season.
That guy was nasty.
I mean, the group seemed to have fun. The group very specifically said they had fun with the beginning part, which I was very glad. It's always the risk when you've got a sort of a forced role-playing session where it's like, you know, there's always seems to be a couple of players that are just like, I'm not interested in this. Get me to the fighting part. But I think with the group I had tonight, it was a combination of some experienced players, some newer players, and everybody seemed keen to do something other than combat, at least at the beginning. I think because they knew from last week, like, the combat just seemed to drag out. It was almost like, oh my God, I'm not even really looking forward to the combat. Let's just focus on something else we can be good at. But yeah, no, the group seemed to have fun. They were all jazzed. I'm like, if you guys have been here for every session, boom, you level up. Next week, level 5. And they're like, yay! So they seemed very excited about that.
Cool. So. Yeah, no, just looking at this, I mean, I have yet to play it. What you've said, you know, makes a lot of sense. I'm looking forward to taking some of those ideas and putting them in practice. But no, I'm just looking. I mean, it's the same monsters, same going through. And the one thing I'm a little disappointed in, and I'll tell you, is that I see no direction. I don't see a lot of, what do you call that? A lot of followable plot lines, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. It's very weak in detail for now. I mean, once again, chapter 2 may just be kind of like a prelude, a really long prelude to a really good second chapter. But right now, I just don't understand where the story is going. I understand the characters are going around. They're getting an idea that people are being kidnapped, branded, slain, and this one guy got attacked, and you managed to save him. That's all I see so far. And his wife's in Helm's Hold, and he can't see her. He says, here's some magic items, disappears. I honestly, if I was a player, I'd be like, where's this going? I don't know if you agree, but
no, I agree. I think when I was reading it too, preparing, because before I got sick. I kind of had deja vu as I was reading it. I thought it's at least it read quite similarly to the previous week's encounter, you know, with a very similar kind of map where you have a two-floored place, a private residence in this case, but, you know, you have a little bit of... Reading it, it seemed like sort of the forced role-play situations to begin with, and it almost just felt like situations that are forced on them to have role-playing involved in it, right? Which I know that's what we talked about last week was the going around town and investigating or finding out information about these cultists, and there wasn't really much of a payoff for the information that you got.
A couple deaths and, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. But it, like I said, it felt like it was a big repeat, so I kind of wondered if it was going to run that way when we actually got to the table, but I never got there, so...
Well, the impression I got, even, I don't know, I mean, this whole chapter to me didn't really seem to, it really just seemed very forced. It's almost like jump on the railroad and away you go. It was every week just fight for the sake of fighting. I never really got the sense that I was, or that the story of the table was progressing towards something bigger. It was just like, it's a night of chaos and there's cultists everywhere. And they're like, okay, well, we're heroes. We're obligated to do something. Let's fight some cultists, fight some devils. And I think one of you guys had mentioned, it's like, well, where the hell are all these devils coming from? Like, I guess poor choice of words, but, you know, like, literally, are they being summoned or what's going on? Like, it just seemed a little bit weird.
Well, to me, it's, you know, okay, I can understand the whole connection with Asmodeus and all that kind of stuff, but I like your suggestion from earlier that maybe, you know, things that are a little closer to Asmodeus, such as tieflings or, you know, people that are normal around Neverwinter, come into play and be like kind of the more powerful. Like, what's the leader of Ashmadai cult? It's Mordivel, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, he's a tiefling, correct?
Yep,
I would imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, have a little more variety of tieflings. I mean, I really don't see the point of devils.
Yeah, I believe Mordivel was actually also the one of the big villains in the first Lair assault.
He was.
Yeah. Oh, that's where I knew the name from. As soon as you said it, I'm like, why do I know that name?
Yeah, he was the guy that was almost impossible to defeat. He was kick butt, man.
Yeah.
But
no, I agree with the tieflings that instead of having just the straight up devils.
So far it hasn't really explained, well, where are these devils coming from? Like, is it supposed to be, well, they worship Asmodeus and he just keeps sending them out because, you know, he's a good guy and he wants to see these devils playing in the prime material plane? Or, like, again, I think it would have made more sense to just say, you know, it's a normal person who has been possessed or has, like, a taste of this devil. He's clearly been, quote, blessed by his evil god, and he's taking on a devilish visage.
Right.
Know, just some flavor text to explain that, although the mechanics of it say devil, it's not literally a devil. Mm-hmm. It's a priest who's been transformed. Just something.
Right. Sort of someone who's, like, willingly let himself be, like, taken over by some devilish entity or something like that, and he's taking on some characteristics almost like a tiefling.
Well, and I mean, the drow seem to always do that. Like, if you've read any of the novels, like, they always seem to be doing that. It's like the priestess accepts the, quote, blessing of the goddess, and it's always like it's transformed into some crazy, ugly, powerful thing. And it's like, well, come on, guys, take a page right out of your own book. Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't mind.
Well, I mean, because they've been having these possessed people as well, so I almost wondered if it would have been something, because they've had a lot of crowds with NPCs and whatnot involved. Like, why not have it where you, if you remember from the previous season, where, you know, they point to a couple of the NPCs and that person's overtaken by a devilish curse and gains these devilish traits, but it's not a straight up devil. It's just a different play on the possessed theme.
You mean like Moonbrook?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So maybe have, like, an influence of Asmodeus or something.
Because then you don't have your sort of, like, oh, this guy was in the cloak all this time, and he was really a devil in hiding. You know, you have an innocent person who literally has nothing to do with this, has no interest in being a part of this, just happens to be cursed because he was at the wrong place at the wrong time, and now he's fighting against the
PCs.
What
would have been cool is to see Zan lead all these thugs.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And the zealots and stuff like that have Zan lead them with that kind of Moonbrookish type possession. That would have been kind of cool too.
Yeah. Or, I mean, even if you take that whole Zan concept further, because there was different levels of you know, how successful you were investigating that house, depending on how far along his possession was, make the those consequences or benefits swing a little further apart. So you would, you, like you said, having, if you failed it really badly, then you would have Zan like leading the charge, basically. If not, then maybe he gives you a little more insight and he doesn't end up.
And you can possessed. You can kind of build a skill charge to make him stand down or something. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Zan, we just saved you. Remember, your mom, la, 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 la. Oh, I'm so sorry. Guys, go away. Something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah, something along those lines. That would be pretty cool, because they did have, I thought with Lady Nidris and her son, that was a pretty interesting thread that was going initially, and would have been cool to sort of had it go a little further.
Yeah.
Now, Craig, you had mentioned earlier about something you read at the beginning of the adventure. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. So at the very beginning, if you're DM reading the adventure, there is a point, and you know, when I was reading, getting ready, and everything, I was immediately reminded of the previous season, where it's very clear to state to you that, you know, let's make this. You have to make this session. The PCs have to understand that you know, the actions that they take are going to have consequences, and it's their story. Just this whole thing about how this is their story, things they do will matter, will make a difference, and it basically, the way it reads, that this isn't a railroad, this is everything you do will have consequences. It's going to echo in the rest of the adventure. So that's what I was saying, it felt like that was very apt for the last season. Or sorry, for the last last season, sorry. But for this one, thus far, I haven't found that to be the case myself. I know, Mark, you've been having some pretty great role-playing moments at your table, and that's certainly much more apt for your
sessions. Yeah, they've been essentially just walking through the monsters. So I thought, you know, if they're walking so far through the monsters, I mean, let's have a little bit of fun. Let's go, we're just making up stuff as we go.
Yeah, and that's great that you're doing that, but as we were talking about that too, was if you're one of the newer DMs, you know, giving it a shot, you're not necessarily going to have that sort of that flair to be able to do that at this point. And it feels very, like we said, like you're being a little bit railroaded into certain situations.
Mm-hmm. But it's not, I mean, overall, it's not all that bad. I guess to Derek's point last week is, we were just so spoiled with the Caves of Chaos that,
oh, yeah,
you know,
sure.
you come back to a railroad or a straightforward adventure, I guess.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you're right. Like, I mean, I don't think there's a railroaded adventure isn't necessarily a bad thing. And certainly Encounters, lends itself a little better to the idea of what Encounters was versus what last season was, right?
But correct me if I'm wrong, this adventure, the first four sessions, mm-hmm. is basically all happens in one night, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that's, so this is sort of the point I wanted to get around to, because I knew Craig wanted to talk about that, was over the last couple of sessions, it didn't really feel like there was anything the players could do or that would have a significant impact on the end. Like, I almost wanted to see exactly the point Craig made. If the players do X in Encounter 2 and Y in Encounter 3 and Z in Encounter 4, when they get to the final bad guy, these following variables will be taken into consideration. Whether it's, you know, there will be fewer bad guys to fight, or whether it will be this guy knows you're coming, so he's had a chance to buff himself up. You know, there didn't really seem to be any sort of consequence for any actions, good or bad. Even the little bit of the call it a skill challenge, for lack of a better terminology, at the beginning of this week, where the heroes have these four little scenarios. And in my mind, it was like, if they do a good job at this and they're able to do it in such a way that it makes sense that you would assume the party continues to move quickly, they should get some benefit for that. And nothing was written in the adventure. And I got to be honest, I knowing that it was going to take a long time, I wasn't going to put anything else in. But again, if I was a new DM, it would never even occur to me to change it because of that. And
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I was a little bit disappointed. I guess I expected more.
Maybe it's also the fact that the author is giving us the opportunity to maybe lay our own tracks and just maybe not taking into consideration that a bunch of noob DMs might be doing something like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, they really did stress, okay, if you really want to know more about this, take a look at Neverwinter Campaign Guide this page, this page, this page, right? So maybe with the dead rats, your DM, or you assume that, you know, a lot of people around are friends, that they might go back and start a campaign with, let's say, the dead rats, or something along those lines. And maybe that's what the author's intention is also.
Well, we'll find out next week when we talk to him.
Oh, you spoiled it.
No,
spoiler
no.
Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, overall, it's not like I'm going home every night going, oh, this is just terrible or anything like that. You know what I mean? It's always fun. And it's, and I, like I said, again, I especially love being in Neverwinter, being back in the realms again, and the tie-in with that video game that they have going right now, too. It's all very interesting stuff. And I also like seeing sort of the Neverwinter book going back and sort of, you know, if you bought the Neverwinter book and all you ever did was play encounters, if you don't have a home game or you're not playing in the realms or whatever, now you sort of have a reason to go back to that book and get into it, you know, for gaming purposes. So
yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah. Have you guys played the Neverwinter game yet?
I played it. The your computer game you're talking about, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I played it.
It's pretty darn good.
Yeah, it's a decent game.
It's like DDO, like super powered.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, is that it's a free-to-play game, which usually scares people off, because most often those free-to-play games are really pay-to-win, is what they are quite often. It's like, oh, yeah, sure, it's free-to-play, but if you want this sword, it's going to be $30 real. But, you know what I mean? Like,
thanks,
it's
boys.
Yeah, I know, when they have these crazy cash shops, but I know they've gone to some pretty great lengths to make sure that's not... I mean, of course, they have a cash shop because they want to make some money off of it, but they've gone to great lengths to make sure that it's not a gimped experience to play it.
No, I think the encounters are scaled free. Based on what you have anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like you're not paying all this money. You have this major advantage over everyone else. So but anyway, so far, so good anyway.
I have not played. I'm not a video game guy at all. So I rely on the feedback from you guys and the community on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm not a video game.
Very positive so far.
Yeah, I'm not a very video game guy myself, but I tend to play like anything that Wizards puts out, such as Neverwinter Nights or Temple of Elemental Evil or Baldur's Gate, those games.
Yeah.
I don't play any kind of Call of Duty or any other stuff like that, so.
Well, they have, Capcom had a couple of old beat-em-up style Dungeons & Dragons games for the arcades.
I remember those.
Like the 80s. Yeah, they're coming out for the home consoles soon.
Ew.
Yes,
has
downloadable titles if anyone's interested. Anyhow, that's it.
But anybody, anybody have anything else to say?
I mean, so far, like I said, going into because I think Derek mentioned last week where he felt, you know, we don't want to sound overly critical at all, but so far, yeah, like I think maybe, and it's because of the previous season, but I have felt a little underwhelmed with it overall. I didn't mind last week's encounter so much, but and having not actually played this encounter, I can't really say for sure, but it did read a lot like the previous week's encounter, so it felt like a little more fillery type of stuff. But having said all that, I've heard good things about the second chapter thus far. I haven't actually read a lot of the second chapter yet. I gave it a quick skim through, but it could certainly change its pace.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that it was a whole one-night thing. There's only so much you can do in one night. I think that right. was the feeling he was trying to give. But to spread it over 4 weeks is very, very tough.
Right.
Yeah. No, I got to agree. I mean, there were certainly... We've had a lot more negative things to say about this encounter season than we have over the last few seasons, but that's not to say that it's not good, and it's not to say that there are not positive things in it. But I think we, you know, honestly, I think we were spoiled a little bit from the previous seasons. So,
yeah,
I do feel that the second half will more than make up for any of the shortcomings we feel we've had over the first season.
Yeah,
the first
I agree.
Half. Again, I have a very clear memory of how it ends. Again, I'm trying not to reread the individual encounters because I want to enjoy them as a player. But I know when I read through the mention the first time around, I thought, wow, this ending is going to be awesome. The challenge I'm finding now is that as much as I like the idea of playing advanced characters and the party going up to levels 4 and 5 is great, but it means the players have more hit points, or the player characters have more hit points, the monsters have more hit points, so the combat takes longer. I know that when we were playing in our home game at epic level, the combat was taking hours and hours and hours. So one of the house rules we did was for the monsters, we did double damage, half hit points. And it meant that when the monsters hit you, you really felt it. But with half hit points, they fell a lot quicker. And tactics became a lot more important. And I'm thinking maybe for next week, I might try something along those lines. Maybe not double damage, but maybe 1.5 times damage and only 2/3 hit points. And I'm going to see how that plays out with my group. And honestly, I think that might be the trick. It'll still give them the sense that this is a hard encounter, but it won't last forever.
Yeah, but the damage is insane to start off with these guys, though.
So but, like I had a guy who did like 25 points of damage. Tonight I rolled amazing. And the guy who got hit, I'm like, does that blood you? He's like, no, just about, but not quite. And I'm thinking, you just took 25 points of damage, you're not even half dead? Like, no wonder the combat's taking so long. And that was like the guy's recharge. He only recharged on a 6, which none of them did. But I'm like, basically it was like an encounter power. I was like, well, geez, if the encounter power doesn't even bloody you with a one shot, like, there's no way his normal damage is going to hurt an entire party unless they gang up on one guy, which, you know, they were unfortunate enough to leave one guy so he could get ganged up on. Anyway, yeah. We'll see how it goes for the upcoming weeks. And I suspect we're going to see a lot of turnaround here. And I think our combined attitudes is going to go from sort of middle of the road to very much positive.
Right. I have that kind of same feeling as well, especially given that it's Eric Scott to be, too. He's got a pretty strong history with writing good stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious. I'm excited to actually speak with him next week. So look for it in the next week or so, and we'll get it posted. Hopefully we can pick his brain a little bit to see where it's going or where the creative process started stemmed to explain a few things. So that would be great.
I'm kind of curious to find out, again, if he's willing to say, what did he write versus what did Wizards publish? Because I'm almost thinking that maybe the editors got their fingers in this one and sort of changed
things.
To Craig's point, the last couple of adventures we've had from him have been very solid. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if maybe he intended for this to be a 3-chapter adventure, and they sort of went, no, we have to make it 2 chapters. And that might be why it sort of feels like it drags a bit.
And I'm going to go ahead and guess that because it's being timed with the release of this Neverwinter MMO, there's probably some changes or some design ideas that were maybe put upon it to sort of make it a little more in line with that MMO. Just a guess, but...
Anyway, we'll see. I mean, there may not be... Some of the details he may not be able to discuss for whatever reason. We found that when we talked to Sean Merwin, there were a few details he just said, I can't discuss it. Or he wasn't willing. I mean, just professionalism, right? It's not his place to sort of go, well, this guy screwed up my adventure. So, you know, and I understand that.
But talk trash about your boss.
Yeah, really. Right. Talk trash about them, and then maybe they'll hire you again later.
Yeah, seriously.
You don't crap in your own backyard.
Exactly. So, anyway.
I mean, and also given the fact he was behind the Neverwinter source book, too, which I thought was a really good source book.
And his novels are really good, too. I really enjoy his novels.
Yeah, for sure. The Shadow Maiden series.
I'm just looking at the Neverwinter campaign. Oh, yeah, Eric Scott to be 3rd name on the book. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I never noticed that before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's about everything I've got to say for this week, but I'm sure we'll have a lot more for next week.
Indeed.
Sounds good. Well, this concludes Session 4, The Ashmadai Strike Back from D&D Encounters Storm Over Neverwinter, Season 13. Join us next week for Session 5, actually, which is Chapter 2, Chaos in Helm's Hold. In Session 5, Into the Mouth of Madness, and we will be joined, well, not joined by Eric Scott to be, but there will be something posted very shortly thereafter. So, guys, thanks a lot again for joining me, and we'll talk next week.
But of course.
Excellent. Thanks, Mark. You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit DungeonsMaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20Foot, and visit 20FootRadius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D encounters. That's 20FootRadius20FTRadius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.